Welcome back to Hour 2 of Sound Space. We are in the spot with Juno-nominated multi-percussionist drummer and composer Larry Graves speaking about he and his band Surefire Sweat and their new self-titled album Surefire Sweat, led by the Toronto-based drummer Larry Graves. Larry is going to be in a phone interview with us, speaking about his band, their inspirations, how he came about this project, and what the future holds, right here on Sound Space.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to the spot. We have multi-instrumentalist Juno-nominated drummer Larry Graves. Welcome to Sound Space. So glad to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
His band is Rob Neil Christian on flute, Elena Capularis on tenor sax and vocals, Paul Metcalf on baritone sax, Brad Eaton on trumpet, Paul McDougall on guitar and vocals, Liam Smith on bass guitar, Rhodes and vocals, and Dave Chan on percussion, Hammond organ, and vocals. I started off by asking Larry what it was like to be a band leader, and he had this to say.
It's my first time leading a band from behind the drum set. I've led groups, whether it be from where I played like a percussion role. I wasn't hidden behind as much of an array of, you know, cymbals and drums and the staging. This is mostly an issue in terms of live performance. So the staging of it, sight lines and just communicating, the drum set is often, even at festivals and events, it's often at the back behind a lot of the other musicians. So it sometimes is an issue for directing the band from behind everyone. And sometimes I can set up in a way that allows me some flexibility. But often, if it's especially, like I said, a festival where it's a preset stage plot, the drums are already set up, I'm using a shared backline, I'm behind all the other musicians. So sometimes we have to get creative in terms of the way we communicate on stage, because the music that I make requires there's a lot of cueing, there's a lot of discourse between the musicians. Artistically speaking, it's not all predetermined, everything we're doing. It's a lot of improvisation and such. That for me is a learning curve. I'm trying to figure that out. I've led bands more administratively, being one of the main composers or contributors, but then not necessarily been the front person.
Yes.
Now I have to straddle this role, and I'm learning as I go.
Larry, you know what your situation reminds me of? And I know there's a bit that is part of it and bit that isn't at all. It reminds me of a Phil Collins Genesis dilemma. Wow, how does this all work? It's very intricate. And in your world, the jazz world, of course, it's like you're saying, there are cues and there's a meticulousness to the music that requires certain sign language in a way.
I guess we fall into this in-between land of jazz and funk and world music and all these different genres. So one of the things is, if people are looking for types of cues or decisions to be made mid-song or mid-piece, they're often turning around and looking at me for the kind of the final say on, okay, what are we doing? Is this, are we going to have another soloist, or are we going to move on and finish the tune and then, you know, go to something else? So with this project, I haven't figured out exactly the solution, how to work it on stage in every situation.
Sure.
So it's a work in progress.
You were a co-founder of a band, Mr. Something Something. It was a Canadian Afrobeat collective that you guys performed from 2003 to 2009. Is that right?
2011.
2011.
Yeah,
Good.
You did your homework.
Yeah, well, and you're a bicycle-powered outdoor concert band collective. Larry, how could I overlook that? I mean, that is so innovative, and congratulations to that. What is innovation to you about working collaboratively and collectively?
For me, it's about reaching for something that is maybe just always unattainable. And I have a vision. I hope that's not too grandiose a term, having a vision, but I have an idea. I don't know if I always achieve it. I think sometimes I come close, especially in the world of jazz as we know it today, because jazz is sort of an umbrella term now. There's so many facets of jazz, right? Mm-hmm. Like, jazz out there that is almost more like a classical form where it's very within certain parameters. It can be wonderful music as well. And there's jazz that's very on the fringes, that's very exploratory, almost, completely improvised or avant-garde as the term. And then there's all these things that are in between, that borrow and steal from various cultures or communities. For me, innovation is trying to find a blend of one's background, one's experiences, both in life and in art making, that extend to the audience, that somehow, are reaching. You're never sort of sitting still. It's always leaning towards something that is hopefully, I guess, new. I don't know if anything really is purely new, but the most important thing I feel is trying to be sincere about it and do it with personality. Try and inject some kind of personality so that it's distinct. It's like everybody, I think, should be. They should be their own person. And you're going to borrow from other people. You're going to have similarities with other things that are going on out there. But I feel like everybody has a voice. We all want to be heard. We want to have conversations with other people about it.
Yes.
And to me, that's what making music is at the end of the day.
When you have stellar musicians like this in your band, they also demand evolution of some kind. They want to evolve. They want to be inspired. They don't want to be stagnant and stay still. So to add to what you're saying there, it's always in motion, always evolving.
All of the players brought something special to the album. They're all people that I feel like I can communicate with both on and off stage. We all agree on certain things and have a common ground, musically speaking.
Larry, with that wonderful summary of your group, I'd love to dig into some music here. I chose Sunshine Interference as one of the two tunes off the album to share with listeners. I like it because of what the song symbolizes. Can you just give a quick summary of the background of this song before we hear it? And we're going to hear a great guitar part of this song is Paul.
And I really like that, like Paul's solo on this.
Yeah, I do too.
Yes, I really agree. It's funny that you brought up this track, because with all of the public attention, which has been going on for a while, but really seems like right now it's coming to a huge apex.
Yes.
The climate crisis. This is one song, and it's an instrumental song. So again, it's instrumental journey that tries to embody the some of the ideas and the challenges that we face in terms of environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I was walking in Toronto, in an area of Toronto, on a very, very cold morning in the winter. It was considerably below the freezing mark. And it was early enough in the morning, the sun was just kind of rising, and I realized, if these buildings across the street from me, these tall condo towers, if they weren't there, the sun would be on my face and I'd be warmer than I am now. I'd be more comfortable. And then that kind of spiraled into me thinking about all the ways, subtle and not so subtle, that our species is impacting the global environment.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is the trade-off is trying to, be progressive, trying to create things that make our lives better in some way. But then the trade-off is the expense of what? What are we giving up? What are we sacrificing on the planet to gain a little bit of comfort in one regard or another, or financial gain? So the song is called Sunshine Interference. How is the blocking the sun or interfering with the natural course of sunlight, what impact is that having on our lives? If we all think about this a little bit more, maybe we can affect change in a positive way.
Let's lay it on people, okay? Here we go. Sunshine Interference. It's from the band Surefire Sweat, and we have Larry Graves on the phone from Toronto speaking with us. Let's hear this song. Yeah, that is a great song. It's very danceable, and yet it's about something very serious in a way, you know? And that's very interesting to me. That's what I love about music. It just makes my ears dance is what it does, first and foremost. And I think a lot of that has to do with your wonderful arrangement. You can tell that there's a camaraderie.
It's one thing to come at people with something that's so very abstract, and you may or may not get a response depending on the person's experience and their interest and so forth. But if you can find some kind of common ground, I think everybody can access rhythm on some level. And if we can mix that with even if it's a simple theme that they can remember, or they can sing along with, or hum along with, or tap their foot along with, I think that there's your foot in the door to gaining their ear and have them listen. And that's a little bit of what I go for. Like we talked about before about reaching and being innovative. And I think that's part of it is, for me, I don't want things to be completely on the fringes. I'm reaching for ideas and experimenting, but I still want to be able to connect with an audience. And that's the hard balance.
It looks like one of your main goals is accessibility, making so many different types of percussion and world music and rhythms accessible to people.
It may or may not take, right? Some people are just not interested. They want to hear what they know. They want to hear the thing that that is most familiar, whether it be classic rock. You know, like there's a nostalgic element to a lot of music.
Yeah.
A lot of people like pop music, top 40 music, because it's what they're comfortable with. And when you introduce other sounds and other instruments, sometimes people, they don't know how to interact with it, I think is maybe part of the thing.
And that's where, you know, there's a kind of, you know, where you're trying to get people to tune their ear a little bit differently, or trying to bend it in a different direction than it usually will go to listen to something.
I mean, that's exactly it. And I think you're absolutely right. Emotion, if you can connect with people and move people emotionally, and sometimes it might not be a positive reaction.
Yeah, right.
You have people that are moved in a negative way, and I don't think that's always a bad thing. I don't want to make music that I don't like. We're exposing ourselves essentially to whoever's willing to listen, and it's very personal. People don't listen to full albums the way they used to. They don't always, you know, they don't always hear.
It's a good example.
They don't always give it a chance. They don't always give it a chance to marinate, and they don't want to hear songs that are longer than 3 minutes, even, you know, because of our obsession with the World Wide Web.
Oh, boy, well, they're missing out on a lot, you know, Larry. They really are. Your album's a great example here, this album. It begins with, like, a threshold. That's the first song on the album. And it ends with, is it Scoffle Strut?
Scoffle.
Okay. I was going to ask you how to pronounce that. Scoffle Strut, because that is the other song I chose to have listeners hear. I love that song, and I wanted to know if you had something to say about that song. It is the final song on the album. By doing my math, it's also the longest. Do you have something to say about that before we play it? It's a great song, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your compliments. I mean, I'm interested more to hear what it is about it that you like, but I will tell you that it was inspired by a piece called She's So Lucky from John Scofield, from his band The 90s, and borrows a few musical sensibilities. And when I first wrote it, had sort of a certain feel to it. It's evolved. By the time we recorded it, it had changed considerably. But I love Scofield's playing, especially that band with Billy Stewart, and it's a wonderful project. That is an innovative, an example of innovation. So this was kind of an effort to pay homage to him, even though I don't think that, you know, we're playing like that band or anything like that. An idea came to me, and then I developed it into this piece, you know, with him in mind, or that music in mind.
I really love that album, Hand Jive, where She's So Lucky comes from. He influenced a lot, and that is why I'd love to play that song. So,
great.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Scoffle Strut, I feel like it's kind of, I joke about it as being a lover's quarrel sort of tune. Like it's got that kind of back and forth, and it's a lazy track. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I always call it scoffle, because it makes me think of kind of scuffling my feet along the ground.
You say scoffle, I say scoffle.
There you go.
Well, let's play it. It's off Surefire Sweat's new album. Let's hear it. Here we go.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. What a great way to round out this interview is when the last song on the album is able to be played. And it was. Larry, thank you so much for bringing your insights, your intelligence, your sensitivity to our world out there and to your band for creating this great music. Do you have anything you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
It makes a huge difference, especially in this day. If people can, and please go to our website or go to our Bandcamp site and have a listen. Have a listen to our music. And if you like it, please do consider purchasing it, because it's how we can continue to make original music, is by being able to fund it.
If you like what you hear in the spot, go out and find the artist and support their work. Larry Graves, my gosh, you are eclectic and have a lot of different projects going. Really appreciate that kind of energy. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Same to you. Good night.
Good night.
And that concludes our spot for the evening here on Soundspace.